He's one man trained to deal with students, but they've pushed him to the limit. They've gone too far. Now he's going to give the class of 1984 the lesson they deserve.
Hey everybody, welcome to Pod Stallions inaugural minisode. I'm Jason Lindsay, and across the aisle from me is my old pal Brian Heiler.
Hey.
And if you can't tell already that this is a little freaky and weird and different because I'm doing the intro, then let me blow your mind a little more. We've been talking about this for a while, thinking of a way to do little sort of mini episodes in between when we post the big ones, because some of the stuff that we're into doesn't necessarily fall quite into the wheelhouse
of the format of the show.
The format of the show, yeah. and Pod Stallions, not that that's ever stopped us from talking about anything on the show, but also because clearly the world can't get enough of hearing our voices, and we keep getting these death threats and, you know, sad notes, etc., that people are having a real hard time going from month to month with just one show. So once again, we're doing it for you, and this is the first one. We don't know what it's called yet, but we'll think of something cool. If anybody has ideas, you can send those in too. But this one, we just thought we'd dip our toes in the water, so to speak, and try something kind of simple. And Brian, as usual, came up with a great topic, I think, to talk about.
I think that this will bounce from, you know, singular toy lines we want to talk about, or maybe, you know, short-lived television show that doesn't warrant a whole hour and a half, or just anything. But for the inaugural episode, let's keep it simple. And I just thought, what are the last two movies we watched?
And not the last two movies we watched together.
No, because that's last never happened
this week. Just the last two movies that we watched. And I think it's good because, actually, I had to think about it because there are a few movies that I've watched in the past, you know, week or two that I haven't gone all the way through and finished. And I thought of the two that I did from front to back. You know, sometimes you get sidetracked or, like, I get kicked off of Red Netflix Instant or whatever, and I forget to kind of come back to them, or they just don't grab me sometimes, and I just kind of let them drift for a while. But so I had to pick the two that I did watch front to back, and luckily there's some interesting stuff to talk about with both of those. But since I've been doing all the talking so far, and it was your idea, I think you should go first and tell us one of the last.
Sure.
Of the movies that you watched most recently.
I have been watching a ton of movies, by the way, because I bought a Roku player.
Ooh, and what's that?
It's a, it's a doodad. And what you do is you plug it into the TV and you hook it up to your interwebs, and it has all these streaming channels.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure I bought it, and it really did just become like my toy because I just got all the B movie stuff I could find, and there's a ton of it. And you know, you remember Joe Senna from MC Toys and Monster Cast?
Sure,
has his own Roku channel called the Monster Channel. Shout Factory has one, and then there's just stuff like, you know, Kung Fu Channel, Horror Movie Channel, Sci Fi Channel.
Okay.
And it really, like, you know, I guess listeners to the show, and of course you know, Jason, that I kind of like junk, and it's full of that. It's got lots of crazy junk in it.
You mean like kind of, you know, campy and...
Well, no, I mean like B-movies, exploitation cinema, that sort of generality. I've always kind of liked off the beaten path stuff. And this thing is just loaded with hundreds of hours of it. In fact, I found one channel that has every episode of Japanese Spider-Man with subtitles.
Ooh, cool.
Oh, yeah, I've been watching that like crazy.
That's
Well, yeah, because I've never seen them in with any sort of English to them. So it was kind of cool to finally watch ones I've seen before, but get the story.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I've had a real, like, and the other thing is, I've roped my 10-year-old daughter into this.
Oh, cool. So
we're watching, like, you know, we watch Sonny Chiba and the Street Fighter and stuff like that. And she's, she really likes schlock horror and martial arts movies and that sort of thing. I sat down with my son and we watched some of, but not all of, Kentucky Fried Movie.
Oh, because wow.
There's some of Kentucky Fried Movie that I don't want him to see. Catholic High
School. Yeah.
But, you know, I get to watch the Bruce Lee...
Genius.
The Bruce Lee parody, Fistful Again.
Genius.
So it's really, like, it's my favorite thing. And
you know what's interesting about that, too? Just a sidestep. Sure. I know we would. You know, I look back at that, and it's like, we weren't of the age at the time that we totally understood the impact that Bruce Lee had at the time. It's very easy once we got older and the legend started to grow and we, you know, the stuff was more accessible via VHS, etc. But back then we really didn't have a lot of, you know, a reference for how popular he was. That whole bit, you realize how big like Enter the Dragon was. For them to parody it that way, that people were going to get exactly what they were talking about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was so in the nomenclature.
Mm-hmm.
Like alongside Airplane and Blazing Saddles and yeah, I agree.
So what have you been,
Okay, well, I saw two films. I'll start with one and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
The first film I watched, and I watched this with my wife, it was a VHS classic, and it was so much fun to watch. And that was a movie called Class of 1984.
Oh, wow.
And
it's, Canadian, right? Wasn't that a Canadian movie?
Oh, my God. Is it not only Canadian, but while we're watching it, you know, part of it is filmed at Central Tech. That's the high school. And Central Tech is in the annex, just where they shot Scott Pilgrim. And you and I were down there a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, I'm watching it with my wife, and she's going, "We used to live by that school." And I'm like, yeah, it's just down the street. And then, you know, there's gang fights and alley fights that are just like on Elmer Ed Street in Toronto. In fact, there's a part where Roddy McDowell, I'm not going to spoil anything, Roddy McDowell gets stabbed or slashed, and it's right next to the steakhouse that I got taken to when I got the biggest sale ever for the company 10 years ago that I worked for. It's just kind of weird, you know? I mean, and also, I was looking at it today, and the alley in which they have their big gang fight, my wife and I were sleeping there. There was a hotel right beside it. And my wife and I were sleeping there in the summer when we went to see a concert. So it's kind of like a weird memory lane thing. But
that's funny.
For those not in the know, it's not a futuristic movie. Its title sounds like it is, but it's set in today, or, you know, 1981. It's supposedly based on true events. And what it really is it's exploiting the punk genre, like
attitude,
like, yeah, which was basically semi-new, and you know, they've got shocking things in the film like metal detectors in the school, which of course a few years later wasn't that shocking, so it doesn't really last all that much.
And it's Michael J. Fox has got a part in it.
Early part for him.
Roddy McDowell, then is there someone else that's
Perry King is the lead.
Harry King is the lead.
Yeah, from Riptide. He's also in a really great exploitation movie called Seek and Destroy.
And he's in Mandingo, isn't he?
I think he is. Yeah, he got around.
Well, yeah. And trivia, was Han Solo in the radio adaptations of Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi, I believe.
I did not know that.
But Star Wars and Empire, Perry King played Han Solo in the radio shows.
So the story is about Perry King. He comes to this school. He's a music teacher. And, you know, he finds some kids who are, you know, worthy of making into this great band. And Michael J. Fox is one of the good kids. And I think he's fairly young in this. And this is, of course, a school terrorized by a gang led by Timothy Van Patten.
Oh, wow.
Who does not really pull it off.
The cast is getting better and better.
And then Timothy Van Patten's got a goon played by Keith Knight. You wouldn't... Keith Knight, if you showed him to anybody who grew up in Toronto, they'd recognize him, but they wouldn't know where. He did a lot of commercials. He did a lot of... cartoon voices.
Mm-hmm.
He's famous for being Fink in Meatballs. Remember Spaz and Fink?
Yeah.
The skinny guy and the fat guy? Well, Keith Knight was the fat guy. And he was, I think he was a Second City guy. He sadly died young. But he's the kind of muscle in Class of 1984. And I kind of think that's funny because everything else he played, he was kind of gentle.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you've got the teaching staff is largely indifferent, but Roddy McDowall plays the science teacher in the film. And he befriends Perry King, and of course he gets brutalized by the gang and ends up, you know, trying to kill Timothy Van Patten and dies in a fiery car crash.
Spoilers.
Sorry, I figure if you haven't seen this film...
I know what's going on here. I'm getting mixed up with another film right around the same time with Vic Morrow, The Bronx...
1990, The Bronx Warriors.
Yeah, is that around the same time?
Is around the same time. And my next film is Italian, and I will touch on that because some of the same cast is in the other film I've seen.
No way.
I love 1990, The Bronx Warriors. But that's not so much a youth in revolt film as that is a futuristic knockoff of The Warriors. You know, Italy loved The Warriors, Escape from New York, and The Road Warrior. Oh, boy. And they really knocked those films off. Yeah, I could do a whole mini-sode on those. There's two films, 1999, The Bronx War, 1990, The Bronx Warriors, and Escape from the Bronx.
Yeah, and the 1990, The Bronx Warriors, that's
Vic Morrow.
It's Italian, right? It's an Italian...
Oh, boy, they're both Italian.
But he must have done it, obviously, before...
Yes.
Got Twilight Zone.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember it didn't get a release forever.
Yeah, it came out around... you're right. It came out, like, I think in 83.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember seeing pictures of it in Starlog going, how is this possible? You know, as a kid, like, how did they... didn't really understand how long it took to...
I cut out all the newspaper ads. I wanted to see it, and I don't think I saw it until the late 80s on TV.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, but so I own it on Blu-ray now.
Class 4 is... do you say you can get it through this?
You can get it through Shout Factory's streaming channel. They have a VHS section, and it's fun to watch. It's like you rented it from a video store in the 80s. Again, it turns out to be like a game of cat and mouse with the teacher and the student, and then eventually something bad happens to the teacher's wife, and the teacher goes on a revenge spree.
Yeah.
Also, one of the other kids in the gang, Drugstore, is played by a guy by the name of Stefan Arngrim. He's a Canadian actor.
Stefan Arngrim?
But he was from Land of the Giants. And I think he is the brother of Allison Arngrim?
Arngrim?
Who is Allison?
Sounds about Arngrim? Right.
That's Nelly. Yeah, it's Nelly's older brother.
Nelly from Furtado?
No, Nelly from Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, jeez. Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And Stefan Arngrim was also in this amazing film called Fear No Evil, which is a bit of a Carrie ripoff from the early 80s that I recommend. It's a bit of schlock. But anyways, Class of 84 is a lot of fun to watch.
I haven't seen it, you know, since probably it hit VHS 100 years ago.
Yeah, it has it has an Alice Cooper theme. That is a real... I love Alice Cooper to death. I've got tons of his records. This is a real low point for
Cooper. Speaking of, did you know that he showed up in the Tim Burton Dark Shadows film?
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And what was I going to say? It is also followed by two sequels that are science fiction called Class of 1999 and Class of 1999-2. I have not watched those since they came out in like 90 or 91. Made for video Terminator kind of knockoffs, but I think they have like Stacy Keach in them and stuff. No connection to these at all.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, in the completely opposite direction.
Well, that's the hope.
I would say. My first film is a little film called Paddington, which is about Paddington Bear, the famous, you know, little bear in the blue coat and the red hat that was left at Paddington Station with a tag around his neck, like, you know, please look after this bear kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the show. In fact, we had a joke in college because they used to play the little animated series, the lovely uh-huh. little animated series.
Uh-huh.
But we used to laugh. A friend of mine came up with this thing that, have you noticed they say said Paddington Bear after every time Paddington Bear speaks? So then
oh, yeah. Okay.
we would be on a long drive and we'd all say something and then the person would go, said Paddington Bear. Right? So I still do that when I hear Paddington.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, he's a those books are kind of perennials.
Yeah.
For a long time. And it's you know, the character is more of a, I think, more of a British sort of institution. In fact, when we were over there in November, we went to Fortnum and Mason and they had a Paddington there in one display with, you know, the marmalade and everything. And at Sainsbury's, it'll come to me. But Selfridges, they had marmalade tied into the film with him on the label that I bought because, you know, that's Paddington loves eating marmalade sandwiches. So they were kind of in the tail end of doing promotions for the film over there. And it hit DVD here, and I picked it up, and it is delightful. It is really, you know, I wasn't sure what it was going to be. I kind of wanted to just see it because of, you know, the cast kind of involved and everything. But I didn't realize, you know, in the opening credits, I saw written and directed by Paul King. And Paul King directed all of the episodes of The Mighty Boosh, which is a favorite of mine and my buddy Rich Fulcher is involved with. And then he went off and did a movie called Bunny and the Bull 4 or 5 years ago, which is kind of a trippy movie. And he wrote and directed this. And it's just, I would recommend it on so many levels, but it's not what you think it's going to be. It's not like some dopey, you know, animated kids thing like Open Season or something like that. You know, the bear is animated and, you know, the rest of the characters are human in the film. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's just the two things that really hit me about it, besides the great cast that's involved, was that it's just very matter of fact that it's a talking bear. Like, no one ever, you know, as they're walking past him in the train station, it's like, well, it looks like a talking bear. Just keep walking. He's probably going to be a nuisance, you know. Nobody says, oh, my gosh, a talking bear. This and the world doesn't stop. It's just kind of matter of fact that this bear is sort of around. And the other thing is the set pieces and the design. I mean, there's one shot where, you know, Nicole Kidman's character, the camera is following her. It's a tracking shot where she's going through a museum into an office. So we're seeing, you know, we've seen one false wall already. The camera's gone past the divider, and now she's in the office, and you keep following her to go to the next room. And as she gets to the next wall to open that door, you're seeing, you know, animals, you know, taxidermied front half all along the wall that she's opening the door. And when she opens the door and goes through to the other room, the camera keeps following her, and in that room, the back ends of each animal that was on the wall are hanging out of the wall. It's just got loads of clever little bits in it like that, clearly written as a family film, but very clever, like a lot of inside jokes, and not just for little kids, but I can imagine, you know, kids digging it, adults will get a kick out of it. It's one of those, it reminded me of the smart kind of Muppet movie type stuff that we grew up with that was never just written for kids, you know, or like the Looney Tunes, you know, those guys, you know, Chuck Jones always said, we did that to, what we were doing was making each other laugh.
Yeah.
And they were never meant for kids. It was just the kids happened to latch on. That's kind of how they treat the character. And then the dude from Downton Abbey, you know, the dad in that, he's the lead. Sally Hawkins is in it. Peter Capaldi's in it.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
I know all about it because I think I failed on, I don't know what happened, but I think I missed it. But the family went anyways.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, because yeah. Yeah, it kind of came and went. But it's a great cast, and the writing is great, and it's fun. And then the bear itself, you know, it's CG, but really, really lovingly done, and you know, lots of detail in the face, and Ben Whishaw does the voice of the bear, and people would know him best these days as Q in the last couple of Bond films. He's the new Q.
Oh, I like, yeah, you know what? I just watched that film, and I saw that in his IMDb, because he sounds so familiar. He's got such a nice, calm voice.
He really does, and it really works for the bear. It's like perfect,
yeah,
perfect kind of casting.
I only heard good things about it. It's just not the kind of film that, you know, I mean, that I would personally seek out unless it was on TV. And,
right, exactly. Yeah. So it's... you know, it's worth, you know, a rental or whatever. I got a kick out of it. I got it for my wife's nephew. He's about 11 or 12 or so. And there was a special impact kind of thing at Target or maybe everywhere. I don't know. But it's like a little – you get a little Paddington Bear in the box.
Cool.
With the DVD, and it was like $12.
He was pretty big here.
What, was he big in Canada? Was
he? Yeah, he was.
Because he was. I remember him from my childhood, and there were books around, and I remember having some of them and reading some as a kid, but not. You know, it just. I don't think it. It's been kind of quiet on the Paddington front. I think in the U.S. for a while, and I would hope that this thing did well enough where it would lead to more films because it was really lovingly done and. And just fun, just a nice surprise. I wasn't expecting it to be as clever as it was, or the jokes to be as deep or clever as they were. So
we get a lot of British kids shows here.
Yeah,
I think I was kind of raised on some shows like you know, Simon and the Land of Chalk Drawings and Phoenix and the Carpet, and you know, just stuff that probably didn't hit the States too hard.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, mm-hmm.
Postman Pat used to be on all the time when I was in college. So, just you know, weird little
Postman Pat,
yeah,
or Postman Pat, yeah. So there you go. There's a fun thing for all the family. What is your second film?
You know what? I actually watched this with my kid, and when people. Hear the director's name, they'll be like, "You did what?" And that is, it's a Fulci film.
Oh, love Fulci.
Yeah. I just, you know what? I can never get
Wait,
the name.
Yeah, what did you, what was it though? Which
oh,
one?
Oh, Zombie. No.
I was going to say Zombie again.
It has a bunch of names. I know it because I used to have it on VHS. In fact, I still may have it in the tickle trunk, but, I think when I bought it, it was called The New Gladiators. But I think it's also known as Warriors of the Year 2072 or Rome 2072. And it's a futuristic film by Fulci. So it's a bit of a departure from, you know, say stuff like Conquest or Zombie.
Okay.
And it's basically The Running Man. In but it predates The Running Man by about 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
It is not better than The Running Man, but basically it takes place in Rome in the year 2072.
Mm-hmm.
The number one television show is called Kill Bike.
And, like, so a cooking show.
Yes, exactly. And its star is a guy by the name of Drake, and Drake is you know, the star of Kill Bike and the undefeated champion.
Okay,
he's played by Jared Martin.
Oh, no kidding!
TV's Fantastic Journey, War of the Worlds.
That guy was just
he
got everywhere. He did everything.
Yeah, he was. He's in some really great Fantasy Islands. And
yeah, I think he was a fixture.
Yeah, and then I think he kind of retired.
You know what he kind of looks like?
Who?
He kind of looks like Peter Hooten, the guy that played...
a little bit. I think his presence is stronger.
Doctor Strange. Oh, yeah, his presence is stronger.
He's got a really...
Shit. The shoes that he wore, that dude wore in Doctor Strange, had more presence than Peter.
Yeah, but yeah, Martin's got a really distinct acting style, too. I like him.
Yeah.
I like stuff that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the other American in the film that you'd recognize is Fred Williamson.
Nice.
And Fred the Hammer Williamson was, of course, a... I think I read an interview with him where he basically said, oh, I just loved being in Italy. So, you know, you could put him up in a villa and pay him a few bucks and he'd be in your movie, you know? And he was in the aforementioned 1990 The Bronx Warriors.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
He's in this. He's in another couple of post-nuke Road Warrior-type rip-off movies. He got around in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a... it's an interesting film. I love it because it's got a high cheese factor. You know, it's got all these kind of retro future designs.
Mm-hmm.
The model of the city is kind of goofy. It's got a fantastically of its time soundtrack. And but the problem I think I have with the film is, you know, they set up Jared Martin's character for a murder, and therefore he becomes a convict, and then they put all these convicts and they're putting him in this new gladiator death match
mm-hmm.
show, and they spent the whole movie building up to this thing, and at the end it's kind of just stupid looking, you know. It's not quite the action sequence you wanted,
right?
And then there's a subplot about computers trying to take over the world and that sort of thing. I enjoyed the film, don't get me wrong, but, you know, sometimes you get a film that predates something Hollywood does,
mm-hmm.
and you go, you see, this is even better than what Hollywood did. No, The Running Man's a better film. Yeah.
Wow, I don't think I've ever seen this.
It's a lot of fun. Like I said, I used to own it on VHS, mm-hmm. But I haven't probably rewatched it in years. The highlight of the film, though, for me, is... my kid came down while I was watching and said, what are you watching? And we sat down for a few minutes. And at one point, you know, there's this sadistic guard who has a pain beam gun
mm-hmm.
that he shoots Jared Martin with. And mm-hmm. at one point he said, Jared Martin's kind of taunting him. He says, so you're going to zap me with your magic stick, Raven? And my daughter giggled the way a 10-year-old would. Because that's an awfully badly phrased line in the film.
What was it again? Are you going to what?
Yeah, zap me with your magic stick, Raven.
Who hasn't used that line?
Yeah, well, my daughter uses it about once a week now.
That's brilliant.
That's genius. So, yeah, Warriors of the Year 2272, or 2072, it's interesting, and especially if you're a fan of Fulci, it's probably one you may have not checked out because he's more notable for the horror.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised he was the director, to be honest with you.
Fulci did he did Zombie, right? I mean, yeah, he did. That's the big one that everybody kind of knows, that famous front cover.
We are going to eat you,
Fangoria. Great cover of that magazine. Got me to buy it, and got my mother to have a heart attack. When she saw the cover, like, what? She's like, what is this magazine? Like, what? Like, why would you have this?
Do you know the original cover, the original title for Zombie, though, was Zombie 2?
No.
You want to know why? Because
there was one?
Night of the Living Dead, Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead
mm-hmm.
was marketed in Italy as Zombie.
Oh.
So these guys put out a sequel.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I like Zombie quite a bit.
Damn Italians. I haven't seen that in, you know, that whole Video Nasty era of all that stuff that just, you know, we all had to eat up because of the magazines we'd get. And, you know, that's how we found out about this stuff. But I haven't seen that at least since then, I'm sure.
I've probably watched it once a year.
Really?
Yeah, I like it.
Well, no, I liked it fine. I just don't know if I could see it again. Maybe.
Zombie versus Shark.
Might scare me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's your two. And my second one, this is kind of an odd one because as anybody that listens to the show has figured out by now. There are some things that are just kind of, you know, perennials in my life ever since I was a kid. You know, James Bond, the Beatles, Doctor Who, things like that, Monty Python, which we've done a show on. And, you know, I've got everything and had everything that the Monty Python team has ever done. Every, you know, back pre-internet, I would get every book, not just the books of the group's books that came out, but individuals. I mean, stuff that I even got John Cleese's books on family therapy, and Terry Jones did ones on, you know, medieval history and Chaucer's Knights and so on.
Wow.
So I got everything these guys ever did. And so anytime, whether it was, you know, Eric the Viking or Fish Called Wanda or Splitting Heirs or whatever that Eric Idle did, I was there because, you know, if the two of them showed up in each other's things or movies or shows or whatever, I was still getting a little bit of, you know, Python, especially after Graham Chapman died. So all of Terry Gilliam's stuff, you know, I'm still hanging on to this stuff. And the last thing was a couple of years ago when they did the farewell nights in England. And, you know, a DVD came out and a CD, you know, special format stuff. And, you know, I got it and ate it up like I've done, you know, my whole life with their stuff. But it truly was the big slap in the face that it's over. You know, these guys, they cannot do these sketches. I mean, they're looking, and it's not like Harrison Ford, you know, getting announced another Indiana Jones or whatever. I have no doubt that Harrison Ford could do that well into his 80s and still look better than I have my entire life. But watching the Pythons go through some of these skits in this thing a couple years ago was kind of, it definitely was the swan song. It's like they're, I think Terry Jones, there's rumors of you know, slight dementia on his part, that, you know, things are happening. So I read about this film a couple of years ago. I couldn't believe it was actually happening. It's called Absolutely Anything. And Terry Jones co-wrote the script with a friend. He'd sat on it for a long time. I'm not sure how it got moving again, because Terry Jones hasn't directed anything in a long time. And Terry Jones, as anyone who kind of knows the Python stuff, he co-directed Holy Grail with Terry Gilliam, and then he directed Life of Brian and Meaning of Life and a few other things. But he hasn't done something in a long time in this realm that wasn't, you know, Python specifically. And the gist of it is an average Joe somehow is granted powers to do absolutely anything he wants. So if he just says, you know, clothing, you know, go on my body without me having to move, boom, it happens. You know, it's kind of a fun idea. Like, you've been granted the power to do whatever you want. And, you know, of course, you got to think about the budget of any film that's going to do this, unless it's animated, to actually make this stuff happen. So I wasn't sure how I was going to go. Don't even, I got greenlit, and the lead character is played by Simon Pegg. And interesting, the other part that was really interesting was that the power comes to the lead character from these evil sort of aliens in a spaceship up in space that were going to be CG and, you know, animated, and each of the voices were going to be the Pythons. They're each going to take a voice. And everybody was on board except for Eric Idle. Clearly somebody finally got through to him, and he said, yes, I'll do it, because they kind of threw in an extra couple of lines from another little character that pops up out of nowhere in these alien scenes. So all of that on the page, I kept thinking, this is really going to happen? Nah, it can't happen. And then I kept hearing about it, and then I saw shots from the filming, and then I saw the movie poster somewhere, and I just thought, this is never going to get a release in the U.S. It's never going to get a DVD release in the U.S. And it didn't. And it came out on DVD in the U.K. I have a multi-region player. So I got it. So the cast is Simon Pegg. Kate Beckinsale is the woman he's in love with. Sanjeev Bhaskar, who is pretty famous in the U.K. for sketch shows. And also played Arthur in Spamalot over there, I think.
That's Rob, so strange that something with that kind of pedigree wouldn't get some kind of release here.
Yeah, and I mean, nothing so far. I don't know if it's going to get a U.S. DVD release, but I haven't seen anything. The Pythons all take voices as these aliens, these, you know, CG creatures. Eddie Izzard's got a part in it. Joanna Lumley is in it. And then, you know, most poignantly and kind of sad, Robin Williams provides the voice of Simon Pegg's dog, because he gives the dog power of speech.
Wow.
And there's some genuinely funny stuff in here. I mean, if the budget was unlimited, in maybe even in younger hands, I don't know. I mean, Peg, everybody gives it their all. It's just it's got some really funny bits, and there's some stuff that's really clever. And you know, one of the characters, you know, says, you know, I want, he's in love with this woman, and he figures out that Peg has the powers, and he says, I want her to fall in love with me. And Peg uses the term, you know, let Tracy fall in love with, Jeff, and she feels like he's a god, you know, treat him like a god or something. And then what happens is she starts a religion based on this guy and is chasing him all over the place because now they have all these followers and she thinks he's the savior or something. I mean, there's clever stuff in there that is very Monty Python. It's very Terry Jones and clever. It just isn't very cohesive. In fact, it's even better. The lead song, the opening credits, written and sung by Roger Taylor of Queen, and the closing credits, Kylie Minogue. I mean, there's a lot of big names involved with this thing, but it just came and went, I think. And I'm building up to all this because I truly think this will be the last of whatever we see that might even have the word Monty Python associated with it. Like, I'm sure Terry Jones won't direct again. And you know, the front of the DVD case is like, you know, the voices of Monty Python. It uses the Monty Python logo on the front.
Fairly easy to do considering they're all in it. But that's crazy that something like that wouldn't see at least a direct-to-video kind of release.
Yeah, it's like I said, I don't. Are you hearing me okay still, by the way?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're just a little choppy. You kind of sound underwater.
Oh, probably because I have the microphone turned low. Am I better now?
Yep, you're getting right there.
Good.
So it's a long-winded sort of explanation of what it is, but I figured, you know, there's a good chance that no one out there is going to know what the hell I'm talking about. So, you know, I wanted to kind of explain what it was, and it was bittersweet to see it. I knew it wasn't going to be, like, hilarious and, you know, make me feel like, Holy Grail all over again. But it had moments. There's some funny stuff in it. I kind of want to watch it again to take it in. And some absurdity. And it's just that bittersweet thing was kind of like, this is the last sort of taste of Monty Python kind of absurdity from anyone involved, you know, with the team, so to speak.
What a depressing realization, but you're probably right. I mean, they're really getting up there. And wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Cleese and Idol did a mini tour here in the States, just the two of them, you know, doing sketches and stuff. The group never did anything, you know, outside of those shows at the O2. And I kind of get it, you know. It's like Idol could keep it going if he wanted to or try to get things going, and Cleese might want to for money now. But, like, Jones, I don't think is – I saw footage of Cleese and Jones – at a screening in the UK for Life of Brian or Grail, some anniversary or something, you know, a year or two ago or something. And, you know, Jones just couldn't get a sentence out. Like, he'd keep thinking, he tried to give an answer and then he'd kind of drift, and then Cleese would come in and sort of, you know, help him answer the question. And I've been hearing that, you know, that may be part of it too, that he's got some dementia.
So
if there's any Python fans out there and they didn't know about this, please seek it out and give it a try, because there's actually some funny stuff, and it's actually rated R too.
Really?
Like, it's got, yeah, there's a lot of, like, you know, there's not like a ton of nudity or anything, but there's, you know, a lot of F-bombs get thrown around, and it really as it's building, it's kind of a clever concept that what would this guy do if he could just do anything? And of course, he's in love with the woman who barely knows he exists, and da da da. And there's some funny stuff, but you can tell that they sort of ran out of time and ran out of money and kind of buttoned it up very quickly in a few spots. And, you know, and Eddie Izzard, you know, you see, like, Eddie Izzard, it's like,
oh, I like him.
Anybody could have done what Eddie Izzard was doing in this film. He was just playing an uptight school principal or something, but everybody signed on because they had a history with the Pythons and they loved their stuff. And, you know, I know it was a dream for Simon Pegg. Like, he when it was announced, he was like, this is a dream come true to even be associated with anything that the Pythons have done. So,
you know what? You say that about Eddie Izzard. I don't think I've ever seen him in a movie where he wasn't wasted. I mean, he doesn't speak in that Avengers remake.
Oh,
which, yeah. Why have him in this?
You know what he's pretty good in? Did you ever see the one where he played Charlie Chaplin?
No, I haven't.
Peter Bogdanovich. It was called The Cat's Meow.
Oh.
Based on a true story of, William Randolph Hearst and Chaplin and mistresses, et cetera, going on some boat trip, and then something terrible happens. But you're right. He doesn't really get to show his stuff.
I think he did a Ron Bennington Unmasked radio thing, and I was captivated. I didn't want to leave my car.
Yeah, he's a smart dude, man. Yeah. He's really sharp, and it's just kind of cool, you know, seeing him and Peg on screen is fun, and Sanjeev is a very funny dude, and seeing those guys together, and then all of a sudden, like, Rob Riggle comes into it.
What?
And you're just like, how did Rob Riggle get into this thing? Like,
yeah.
You know, not that he's not funny, but I mean, it's like,
it's you expect him to show up in something with Amy Poehler in it, or
yeah, it just all of a sudden he pops into this, and he's a complete, you know, American douchebag that, you know, is trying to win this girl back kind of thing, and it's an odd mixture, but it's definitely the last of the last gasp, sort of. So I know he'd worked a long time to try to get it made at all, and the fact that it got made is kind of a miracle. But there you have it. That's two and two.
Yeah. So that is our first inaugural mini-sode, which I think we ran long on. Yay.
Yes, naturally.
So we'll be back probably sooner than later with a full show, then another mini-show. I don't know if we'll debut them on Fridays or Wednesdays or what we'll do. But, you know, hit us up with topic ideas for short shows, and we'll take a look.
Yeah, that'd be fun if anybody, you know, and it doesn't have to be something completely fresh. If there's something that you heard us kind of dabble with that you kind of want to hear more on or something, I don't know, that we can do that too. And again, thank you everyone for the kind notes and listening. And, you know, I had some folks come up to me at the Silver Scream Fest in Santa Rosa.
I heard.
I told you. And
I listened to a podcast about it.
And say how much they enjoy the show and the stuff that we talk about. And one of those is a dude goes by the name IC Robots, Don Slick, IC Robots. It's a podcast that he does, which is very fun. But met him in person, and he just was. It's really nice to get that feedback, because we don't have that kind of interaction. We don't, you know, check the ratings all the time, so to speak. So thank you again, everyone, for even bothering with us. We appreciate it. yeah. So cool, man. This is fun.
Yeah, this was great.
Anything goes. So next time we'll talk about some more silly stuff.
Action figures and junk.
Yeah, perfect.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
See you in 2 weeks.